Hi, everyone. It's Gary, and it's John Hard, and also Jeff Andresian's joining us tonight. And it's been so long since we've heard from Jeff, and that's why we're getting all the people on the phone and on the Basecamp page that we haven't seen for so long. And it's just, this is going to be a really fun conversation. For those of you who may not remember or are new to Basecamp, Jeff was on with us about a year and a half ago. And as he had gone back to being a commercial pilot with U.S. Airways and now joined into American Airlines, and just kind of bringing us into his journey from being a pilot and then having, I was 8 years, right, Jeff? 8 years off with medical leave? 8 years off, and then going back, and he was just sharing his experience of what this was like for him, and as he looked at things, what was God up to? So now, a year and a half later, we would love to have Jeff kind of bring us back into his journey, especially with the idea that life can be understood backwards, but it must be lived forward. So we want to hear about, as Jeff looks backwards and brings us back into his journey over these years. So, Jeff, thanks for doing this with us.
Oh, yeah. My pleasure. You know, I would have to say over my journey and my experience, I loved the awakening of going to Wild at Heart and what happened to me, and actually seeing the gospel portrayed in such a masculine way that was so attractive. And with that, I would have to say, as I look back on my journey, probably one of the most defining things, and the thing that has given my life the most purpose, has been this idea of calling, Gary, and this idea of story, desire, and journey, and what does it look like to be oriented? And you know, I just want to go one step further with that. Is when you held at the Lake House with Mark Haskins the advanced retreat for calling. I'm not sure what you actually call that. But I was able to attend. Remember that the first night of that retreat?
Oh, that's right. It was one of those It's Your Time retreats.
It's Your Time.
Yeah.
It's Your Time. Now, if you haven't made one of those, I would highly recommend it. But the thing that I so appreciated and I heard and it lightened up my heart was that God is in the business of resurrection. You remember saying that the first night, Gary?
Mm-hmm. Right. And the clip that we showed from Skyfall, where he says that he asked him what his hobby was, and he said, "My hobby is resurrection."
Resurrection, yeah. And that this is what God's in the business of resurrection, and I love that. And so I would like to talk a little bit about that tonight, and continuing with this eternal journey that we're on into this. And if there's the three orienting points of story, desire, and journey, I'll touch on a little bit of story, and I'd love to share a little bit about adventure and journey. But I'd love to start with a quote, and it's in a book, and it says, "It's true what Stephen Pressfield says, that there is a voice, there is a force resisting the beautiful things in the world, and too many people are giving in. The world needs us to have courage," Robert McGee says in his book. "The world needs for us to write something better." And then the other quote I'd love to start with tonight is another one from Einstein, who said, "Imagination is more important than knowledge." And for Einstein to say that in the age of reason that we live in, is amazing, you know, quote right there. But I'd love to start the evening with that, and I'll start with any questions you have, or I could start talking. What would you guys rather do?
I'm guessing that you should probably start talking and give them a chance to react to some more things that you're talking about.
Okay. All right.
Jeff, let me give you a slow pitch. Let's start with, first of all, why did you want people to watch the movie The Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I love the movie, and not for all the right reasons in the sense that I was inspired, but I was actually more convicted while watching the movie. And let me just give you a little background. Well, instead of doing that, I'll give you some background in the middle of this, but let me just start by saying, if you remember, if you haven't seen the movie, it's easy for me to kind of describe it a little bit. But Tom Cruise plays a character named Bill Cage. And Bill Cage is a Army recruiter who goes around the world. He's smartly dressed. He's high profile. He's on TV and often quoted. And he recruits guys for an extreme risk of going to battle against an enemy that actually they can't defeat. And he is a smooth-talking, sharp-dressing recruiter for the military. And then the day comes when he actually meets this general. It's played by Brendan Gleeson. His name is General Brigham. And General Brigham brings him in the office and says that on D-Day, basically, when they go in against this enemy, you're going to be on the first wave. And Tom Cruise, the Tom Cruise character, becomes extremely uncourageous at that point. And he basically says, listen, I'm a recruiter. I am not a fighter. I've never fought. I've never I'm incapable of actually doing this. And he goes, well, it doesn't make any difference. You're going in on the first wave. And in my story, I think the thing is I could so relate to Tom Cruise in this story, because if you look at our journey, you know, if you look at how God has called us and how he called Abraham and how he called him out of what was known and to walk into the unknown, and this is the journey part of our story, you know, it's a walk of faith into the unknown. And I think the difficult thing is that we have a tendency and a propensity to stay in the known as opposed to the uncomfortable feeling of walking into the unknown. And I was looking at the Tom Cruise scenario there, and I just want to say something for myself. I was working with you, Gary. We're doing the calling retreats, and I love to be an agent of movement for men. I want to move them from where they are to where they're supposed to be. Why are we doing calling retreats if we're not into helping guys through transition and helping them move into the glory of their life? And so we're always curious and we're always aroused by movement. We'd love to see them move. And so asking them to take a chance to move where risk is such a part of our journey, was asking them to take a big risk in their life. And as I'm asking them to do this, I'm realizing that in my own life, I had a big risk ahead of me. And that was this idea of going back to flying. I had to recover my own career. And I had to take that risk. So I think in the last podcast, we kind of covered that, the risk of going back after 8 years, because if you're off for any period of time in an industry, that industry will pass you by. And so the risk for me was, could I actually even do it? And they hadn't seen anybody come back after 8 years, so it was a big deal at U.S. Airways. And long story short, though, is I came back on an airplane I was familiar with, and that was a 737. And the idea was that I would go after the 737 was gone and retired, I would go fly the 757. And that's the Maserati of airplanes, and everybody wants to fly that. And lo and behold, when I came back, I actually got a bid on the 757. They paid me for it all summer. But just as I was about ready to take the bid, I lost the bid, because they started doing some cutbacks on that particular airplane. They started selling the 767s. And and you fly both. You fly the 7.5 and 7.6. So I lost a bid, and I lost a bid by one number. And the problem with that is that the airplane I'm on was going away, the 737, and the only thing left was the Airbus. And I'm sure Jerry Lynn can appreciate this, but if you're a Boeing pilot and you sit on an Airbus and you watch this thing, you know, start up, push back, you know, taxi out, take off, the airplane is at 10,000 feet before a Boeing pilot can actually recognize where the airspeed indicator is. This airplane is completely different, completely, utterly different than the one that we're used to flying. It's frightening to look at it because you have no idea what's going on as these guys are flying it. And so when I lost a bid on the 757, I knew that that means that I have to go to the Airbus. And here's the interesting thing. I've walked with God long enough now that when I lost the 757 by one number, I knew that that was God. I knew that He was going to take me to the Airbus. And the reason is because my wound is the wound of you're an idiot. You know, you don't have enough. You're not smart enough. You don't know enough. There's no way you could do that. And so a part of my recovery in my journey is that God is going, no, the 757 isn't really what you need. The Airbus is. And as soon as I lost my bid by one number, I resigned myself. I knew it was God. And that I was going to have to go into probably the scariest thing that I had ever embarked upon at the ripe age now of 56. Because going back to study the Airbus is like learning how to speak Chinese. I don't know any other way to describe it, you know, in the basic sense, right? And not only that, not only you have to learn how to speak Chinese, but you're going to have to do it in such a way that, you know, then you're going to have to fly the airplane. You know, it's a matter of life and death, right? So so I had to head into this thing. Now, here's what I can totally understand with Tom Cruise in this movie is this general is going to force him into combat. He's going to force him into going to the front lines. And he's scared to death. And I guess, if anything, I would like to talk about is the character of God and that how He's not afraid to call us into something that's impossible, because we're only looking at it from our perspective and what we're capable of. And we don't understand that God has called us into the impossible when He called us to faith, in the sense of He asked us, He said, hey, if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart that God raised Jesus from the dead, you shall be saved, right? So this idea of God's in the business of resurrection, the resurrection is tied to our faith that God rose Jesus from the dead. Well, if you've ever seen a dead person, you know that life's over for that person on this earth. It's over, right? But our faith is tied to the fact that God raised him from the dead. And almost immediately, we're birthed into the impossible. And that there's no way we can do this journey or live this life on our own. We're absolutely, completely dependent upon another party in order to live this life. And so when I got the bid on the Airbus, I knew it was Him calling me into it. So here I am. I can relate to the Tom Cruise character who I could be a recruiter for God, you know. I could have a high visibility position. I could go there and ask guys to take supreme risks and not take any myself. And I knew that I had to go back and recover this and take my own risk in life. It was just part of my journey. And so, and I can also relate to the general part who wasn't afraid to put this guy on the front line. And seeing God in that God is not afraid to call us into some impossible things. So I guess I'm talking to guys who are facing possibly some impossible things in their life as I go through this. But what I really enjoyed about the movie was how he had to learn how to fight. He had to become a fighter to recover, you know, this ability in him to be a warrior. And he had
hey,
to
Jeff.
Find... Yes, sir.
Hey, I want to interject because before you get into that, I want to step back to you, what you were just talking about. But I don't want to leave it and not go into what you're getting ready to talk about. So, but as you were talking about taking the risk and where you were, I'm thinking of so many guys that I know and who are in situations where they just don't think they're where they're supposed to be, but they have no idea where they're supposed to go.
Right.
And in fact, I heard a quote, I can't even remember if it was a movie or somebody said it this week, but they said, if you're a wing walker, it's not very smart to let go of one part if you don't have hold of the other part.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that's pretty funny, but it's also true. What do you say to the guy who doesn't know what part he's supposed to be grabbing hold of, but he just feels like he's supposed to be letting go of the first part?
Right. Right. Well, you know, I go back to the quote I read in the beginning there, that there's this dark force in life that wants to keep you on the couch. It does not want you to engage life. It does not want you to walk into the unknown. And it certainly doesn't want you to engage in risk, because that's where God lives. You know, for the masculine heart, we find him in these situations. And so I think the enemy's job is to keep us on the couch. And, you know, if you look at, you know, what we face as men today, you know, you can go down a list and you can go, oh, my God, look at this administration and what's happening to the Constitution. Hey, we need to be ready for the next terrorist attack. They're coming. Do you have personal identity theft protection? What is your testosterone level? Are you losing some energy in the bedroom? You must be invested in gold, because this economy is about to go tits up, right? So we're so busy in the sense of trying to survive and make life work that we've forgotten this calling that we've been called to, this great adventure into taking risk and going beyond what we know into the unknown. And I think that's the hard part. And it's hard to talk to a man like that because we've been raised in the institution that just absolutely celebrates conformity. And often if guys go to church, the big message is, well, just come on back next week. You know, instead of being the called out ones, we're more called to be congregational and to make life safe. And what we've really given up, John, is this idea of looking for that person who can bring us through a dangerous mountain pass where we might get some elevation to give us some perspective on our life and see what some possibilities are out there. Hmm. You know, we're not plotting the trade winds for some ethereal push into some exotic lands. You know, I mean, and it's, you know, we've stopped diving for pearls, you know. It's no longer practical to buy that sport airplane to fly upside down because, number one, that's dangerous, and we could use that money for our 401k account, you know. And so, you know, it's just this idea of what really comes against us as men, but what we're really created for, you know, in the sense of risk, frontier. And as we do that, we're always trying to get back to that idea of, in my opinion, the garden, you know, where there's intimacy, there's resurrection on the other end of it. But where there's intimacy with God, where there's dominion and where there's sex, you know, I mean, you know, I mean, there's death, but there's resurrection, you know, and when resurrection happens, it's the most beautiful thing because the wine tastes better, the colors are more vivid. You know, we're saying to go over that mountain, to take the risk, because resurrection, the possibility of that, what it produces is just amazing out there.
Yeah.
And
So you were getting in ready to talk about the training.
Yeah. So here's how this movie spoke to me. And now I'm looking for God because I don't know how to do what I have to do. I just don't know how to do it. This airplane is impossible. I don't know. There's no one out there. I don't know how to do this. And so there's a scene, and it's in the actual, I'm so glad you put the trailer up there, because it's in the trailer where he meets this ranger, and it happens to be a girl. In the movie, her name is Emily Blunt, but she plays this girl, Rita. And it's this girl who's this ranger who's way ahead of him on this journey how to fight this this particular enemy. And she looks at him and she says, if you'll come here every day, I will train you. And I knew that that was the voice of God in my life. If you come here every day, I will train you. And so for a month ahead of time, I went every day. I trained every day. I spent 2-3 hours in the books. I would go down to the training center at U.S. Airways, and I would look at their computer screens. I would look at, and I started to study the systems of the airplane, and I started to take the mystery out of it by getting knowledge about the fuel system, the electrical system, the hydraulic system, you know, how to load the computers and things like that. And so what was really fun was God was beginning to train me. And as I would go down to the training center, I would get all kinds of intel on how a guy failed a check ride and what happened, right? So there's a guy sitting there. He's got this long face. And I said, hey, how's it going? He goes, well, I failed my check ride. I go, what happened? He goes, well, I was on session 4, shooting an RMP, RNAV approach into Reno, Nevada. And when we're on the approach, I lost my MCDU. And we didn't know what to do, so we did a missed approach, but we didn't have our missed approach altitude in. We busted our altitude on missed approach. And it was like, doo-doo, I got it. Okay. So sure enough, when session 4 comes along for me, I lost my MCDU. Well, I knew exactly what to do, you know. And so all my effort into showing up every day paid off immensely, so that when ground school started on this airplane, I was ready for it, because they give you more information than a human being could take in one day. There's just no way you can go there from scratch and get through. So we had 50 guys go through from the Boeing class. 27 of them got held back for extra training. And I was able to go right through this thing because I showed up every day. And I know God kind of took me through this. But I want to just give you one thing that happened to me, and that was that on my last check ride, I had, you get so many of them through this whole event, but there's a thing called a loft. And if you get through the loft, you have an instructor, they're going to sign you off for your last check ride the next day. And the last check ride is actually the easiest of all the check rides you've taken. So I take the loft. And I get through it. The guy says, you guys are doing great. You're way ahead of the game. You're not going to have a problem tomorrow, and blah, 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 blah. And I came home, and it was now I had been training for 3 months. I came home, and I threw my all my briefcase and everything across the room, and I told my wife, I said, I'm fucking done. I can't do this anymore. If I get one more engine failure, if I have to look in the QRH one more time and then page, dash 4 for system failures and how to handle it, I can't do it. And I was shaking, and I broke down. And if U.S. Airways was going for your breaking point, they had found it at me. And it was one day before my check ride. I had a sleepless night that night. I woke up the next morning, and I was violent. I was like, if you were to look at me the wrong way, I would have chopped your head off, you know? You know how you can get, like, I don't know if you've ever had close to a nervous breakdown, but I was in bad shape. And now I was going in for the biggest check ride of my life. And there's a reason I'm telling you this. And so I called up my good friend, David Riley. And David Riley quickly told me a story of how he had rewritten an entire play at his church. And when he rewrote the play, that in his own words, the day he showed up for it, he could not remember one line for the play. And so his wife found him crawled up in the fetal position in the back room, and she decided to pull him out and say, you could do this, get up there and do this, you know. And so in 10 minutes, David had me laughing, and it was so interesting. I walked into the check ride, And I'll be honest with you, I could not do a thing wrong. Everything on my final check ride was flawless, to the point where the guy said, this is the first time I have nothing to say after a check ride. All we can talk about is what you guys did right. And what was interesting about that is that there's resurrection, but before that there's death, you know? And in the sense that it's God who brings us over the finish line from the impossible to the possible. It was Him who brought me over the finish line there. And I say that in the sense of, and you know what I'm talking about, we don't work through Romans 6 and 7 and attain to Romans 8, but rather we wash up on its shores. We just give up, and God is the one who brings us over the finish line. And so there was this amazing process that I had to go through of feeling His hand kind of bring me over the finish line and to do this impossible thing. And
Jeff,
so,
let me ask you a quick question too, because this is fascinating. I love this story. You're at home with Dana. You're violent. You're depressed. And we all have been there to some degree. All the thoughts going through your mind are, I can't do this. What was it that got you to keep moving? How did you actually get out of that house and get back down to the testing site?
You know, I think it was the movement had to start from the beginning. You know, I mean, of the 50 guys, 27 got held back for extra training, which tells you that this is really hard stuff, you know, and you would hear this stuff and you're frozen with fear, you know. And this is happening in all of our lives. This is a metaphor for every man, you know, and the adventure that God has called. We can get frozen with fear, you know, in A Million Miles in a Thousand Years, in Donald Miller's book, he talks about this dark spirit that just wants to keep you on the couch and do not enter in and take a rest, you know. And so, yeah, I had enough knowledge at that point to know that it was actually God that was going to bring me through, and that he would show up when I absolutely needed him to show up. And so you kind of walk in there not knowing, you know. I mean, you do. I mean, you know, when Jesus was praying in the garden, there was a little bit of, hey, are you going to come? Is there another way we can do this? You know, because I don't really want to do this, right? You know, if there's not that, it's not the cross. If you know you're going to make it, it's not the cross, you know. And I do. I want to talk about resurrection tonight, but the first thing you got to recognize is that there's death, and that's what every one of us wants to avoid. Nobody puts ourselves there. Nobody wants to go through that, you know. That, because, I mean, if I break down here in this part of my career, it's over. I mean, they just simply show you the door, you know. They quote, retire you, you know. So for me, it was this or bust, you know. And so
hey,
it was, it was, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me tell you so far what I'm struck by. And it's this idea you talked about, you know, as a subtitle is, it's live, die, repeat. And so we're talking about the live, then the death experience, and I'm really struck by this idea of, you know, we get into something as you're describing, and every fleshly inclination says we've got to find a way around this, or a way, over top, around the side, something, but don't go through this.
Right.
And it takes strength and faith and perseverance to say, no, actually, I will work my way through this. Don't know what the other end will look like, but I do know kind of who's waiting for me on the other side of this. That's God. So I'm going to push through this. And so I'm very struck by your story about how you just talked about you broke down like the day before. I mean, of all the,
yeah, yeah.
The day before. And on another conversation, I don't know if it was on a campfire conversation or just with someone on the phone, we talked about the idea of, you know, so many amazing things in our life happen by hanging on one more day or five more minutes, you know, or someone was saying that it was probably one of the base camp guys said that, you know, with the Navy SEALs, one of the guys said the way he survived the training was he just said, I'm going to hang in this until the next meal, because they always got meals. They didn't always get sleep, but they always got a meal. So the idea was, I am not going to give up. I'm going to push to the next meal. And then once you had a meal, you were kind of ready to push for the next phase. And then you had to say, I will push to the next meal. And it's just that perseverance thing, I think, where almost all of us get taken out. And
yeah.
Life is on the other side of it. Like you said, one more day. Just
yeah.
a few more hours than you were there, and I think that's just huge.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And you know, I can honestly say that on the other side of all this, you know, it was really great, because then you actually, after the check ride, you pass that, you actually have to go out and fly the damn airplane, you know, and you're like, you know, you have to get in there, you know. So my first flight was to Denver. And so the instructor pilot flies the first leg, and then you fly the next one. So my first takeoff was a high altitude airport, Denver. I'm full, 198,000 pounds, and you're going to take off and use a side stick to actually rotate this damn thing. You know, so it is just amazing experience. And I go through this training, and at the end of it, they go, "Man, you're ready to go. We're going to release you." You know, and I'm looking at them like, "You're just going to give me the airplane?" They're like, "Just go." And they're like, "Yeah, man, you're ready to go." And so I'm like, "Well, where are you sending me?" And they said, "Well, San Francisco." And I said, "Isn't that where Asiana? Wasn't that where his first flight was to San Francisco? The guy who hit the seawall there?" And the 777 and crash, you know. You mean I'm going there? And go, "Yeah, you're going there." And I'm like, you know, so I'm flying to San Francisco, and I'm going, okay, they're going to give me 28 right. I know I'm going to get 28 right. I'm going to make my first landing on my own in this day. They're going to give me 28 right. I know it, you know. And sure enough, I get 28 right, you know. So I'm thinking the whole time, hey, man, just clear the seawall. I don't give a crap how smooth the land. Just clear the seawall. You know, I'm not going to hit that. I am not going to hit that seawall. You know, and so, but you know, that the next night we had to push back, and it was dark out when we pushed back, and it was unbelievable experience. You're sitting in this jet that is like something out of Star Wars, and you're like push back, you start some engines, and you look at the sea of lights that you're supposed to taxi out with. And as we taxi out, the sun is coming up, and we take off, and there's Yosemite and all the mountains and all of its glory. And on the other side of all the pain and all the hurt and all the confusion and all the loss is this resurrection. And it was absolutely spectacular, you know. And, you know, this idea that, you know, it's not all about death and loss. You know, there's the other side of that. And I sat up there, and I was just absolutely stunned and amazed. And I don't know about you guys, but I have lost so much in my life. I have lost so much, and to taste one sweet moment of resurrection was just absolutely a phenomenal experience getting on the other side of this, you know. And so it was a great moment. And but
okay,
Gary,
so let me ask you, because yeah. we're coming close to the end of our time here, and so let me ask you this question, and I hope this isn't a diversion from where you're going, but. So as I think about your life, and hearing your voice again is so good, and remembering so many things. So, you know, so you were an airline pilot for U.S. Air for quite a while, medicaled out. You started this thing called The Cave. You started a ministry, a nonprofit ministry. At first it was going great, and then you ran into the hardship. It was live, die, and repeat.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. the subtitle of the movie. And
yeah.
now you're flying again, and you're bringing us up to date with some things. How do you put all those – what do you see in all of those pieces?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything yet?
The only thing that I thought of, and this isn't for me. This isn't for you or anybody else, but this was for me, is that in order for me to ask men to take risks and to move them, which is my calling, I will get in your life when you need to move. If you need to move your position from one place you're at to another, I'm one of the guys you want on your team. Because that's the thing that wakes me up. That's the thing that orients me. That's the thing I give focus to in another guy's life. But in order for me to do that, I realized I had to keep going myself and stay on and taking the risk. And hopefully that would give more of a voice to what I'm, how I'm trying to help another man on his journey. That the idea of taking a risk is so worth it. Does that help answer your question, Gary?
It does. It does.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
So keep going down the direction where you were going before we're out of time.
Well, one of the things I want to tell guys is that, you know, as we look at this idea of taking a risk and taking movement, what I really would like to take off the books for guys is the success and failure thing. You know, obviously when you fly jets, you want some success because, you know, you got passengers in the back. But taking that off the table, what does it look like to help guys take a move and to go forward in their life and to stay, get out of the stuckness without the grading of, well, that was a pass or fail. It's just the fact that they went and what they learned when they went that is so important, right? In the movie, he failed every day. But as he failed, he became quite the warrior, actually, by the time that thing was over.
Right.
He found out, actually, he was quite a fighter. And I think that that's what we have to do to recover some things in our life and to bring resurrection to things that have been dead for a long time in our lives is we have to fight to get them back, you know? And so how do you find that person that will help you to get over that next mountain range and to keep moving in your life and take away that report card of pass and fail? No, we just want you to keep going, to keep moving, you know?
You know what? And so as you're saying that, Jeff, here's what comes to me. Again, I think about that subtitle because I love it so much. Now that we're talking, I love it all the more. But I just think, I'm just thinking, you know, live, die, repeat. Live bigger, die, repeat.
Yeah.
Live even bigger, die, repeat. It's just
that would have been
ever
that would have been a
strong.
That would have been a better name for that movie.
Yeah, and that's
right.
Helpful because of, yeah, that's very helpful. Just live, die, repeat sounds like, you know, I want to go through this cycle one time. I think that's enough. As opposed to he was just a bigger, stronger, wiser man. And you know, then to me, the dying is worth it, okay? It's,
yes.
I'm going to be more of who I need to be and who I am than just simply dying a little more the next day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I love that Richard Rohr, when he said that, you know, the entire world knows about death and resurrection. We're the only species that tries to avoid it, you know? And we do everything we can to avoid it, but God is in the business of resurrection. And I think that all of this really is a prelude to what I would really like to talk about sometime is what does God want to recover in your life? There are some things in your life that have been buried and have been buried for a long time and that he wants to recover them and he wants to resurrect them. And a great book out there called Unthink by Eric Wall. And in the book, he says, hey, you take any group of fifth graders and you walk into that room and you say, how many artists are in this room? And he said, 98% of those kids are going to raise their hand. They have some sort of art. They know it. Now, if you take that same group at 16 and say, hey, how many artists are in this room? You're going to get about 3 hands. And the question is, what happened from 5 to 16, right? And so many of the things that God wants to resurrect in your life happen to you that these things were already given to you when you were young. And this is the importance of story, Gary, and going back, I think, is that I used to love to do this. And how God wants to resurrect that, not as a kid, but as an adult, you know? And
right.
What does that look like in your life, you know? And that's the real conversation that I'd love to have. and one that I could give another hour to, really, you know.
As a hint, as a prelude into this, another conversation, what does it seem like he's recovering in your life that was there, was lost or buried or unseen, and now he's bringing back up again? Is there something?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely do. I think that I went through a period of years, you know, when we suffered all the loss of medicaling out and what that meant financially, and, you know, Angie going to the family school and what that meant financially. And I would look back and go, they were my best years ever. There wasn't, you know, I loved those years, but there was a loss of a lot of things. And there's a time in your life to punt and kick back and not go on the offensive. There's times for that. But then there's a time, and you'll know it because it'll be God who comes along and says, now it's time to move. We need to actually recover that. You need to fight for that. That's actually your airspace, and you need to go out there and reclaim that. And so I think what he's recalling in me are some of the things of what I love to do as a kid. And here's one of them, Gary. When I was 16, I used to take my friends up, I was 17. I got my permit at 16. I got my license at 17, and I would take my friends in a J3 Cub. Now, this is a 1947 fabric airplane, and I would take it out over the water in Perth Amboy, New Jersey, and I would put it in a slight dive, and I would get it up to about 110 miles an hour, which is almost impossible in a J3 Cub, and it's screaming at you. And then you'd pull it up, and we would do a loop. Okay, now I'm 17 years old. I'm in a 1947 airplane. It's wood with fabric cover. And ask me if I have any parachutes on board, you know? No, we don't need any parachutes. This is the stupidest thing you could ever do in your life, okay? But I'm upside down, and when you get on top of that loop, when you get right up on top of that thing, I don't care who's in the cockpit, both of you will be screaming at the top of your lungs. Everything in you is just, wow, you cannot believe it, you know. You're upside down. And what I didn't realize is I was searching for God. I was hunting for him right there, you know. And then I would do the loop. I would take him 50 feet over Staten Island. I would get just enough altitude over the Verrazano Bridge. I would loop into the New York Harbor, circle the Statue of Liberty on my way, and go up the harbor below the Twin Towers. The Twin Towers would go up to about 1,300 feet. We would pass them at 700. And it was stunning, you know. And I think the thing that I would like to call people back to, and what I'm recovering, is this love language I have with God that looks so much different than how I was raised at church, you know. And I look back on my church years, and I couldn't replace them. I learned so much about God in the building, you know, but that I really experienced him in the adventure, in the movement, in the unknown. And what does it look like to begin to present that sort of God to people, where God is more easily found in nature than he is in the works of man?
Mm-hmm. That's good. So we're at a time. So, John, let me just ask you: Do you have one more question you want to ask? And then I would love kind of your final thoughts until the next call for the men. So, John, any question right off?
No, just a comment, and I'm going to read what Buzz said because I think it really echoes all of us. He says, Jeff, your decision to continue training and to enter into risk again is the very thing that adds substance to your life. And it speaks to me, and I'm sure many men. I agree. You are such a fearless leader, and, you know, I think I'd follow you just about anywhere. I wish I had been in that plane doing the loops with you.
Well, do not give up on that, John. I happen to be able to get checked out in a small airplane like that here in North Carolina. So watch what you say there, because you might find yourself upside down real soon, man, you know.
My dad used to take me up and do the same thing. I loved it. I remember looking straight up and seeing the ground. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Hey, we got to do that one more time. Secondhand lion, you know? I mean, that's not how you want to go out, you know? But, you know, John, I really appreciate that. But I want to act, and I'm honest when I say this, I'm scared to death. You know, I'm risk aversion, you know. I'm not very comfortable with that. Although I know when I go, listen, I'm going to leave my balls behind if I don't move forward. You know what I mean? That's the only time when I'll keep going, you know. When I really know I'm going to take a serious hit on who I am as a man if I stay here, you know. And I think that's the most important thing for men. On the Lewis and Clark journey, as they were crossing the mountains, they had to find some horses in order to get over the mountains, and it was late summer, early fall. And if they didn't find the horses to get over that mountain range, Meriwether Lewis knew that his expedition would have broken up if he would have stayed on the wrong side of the mountains. And I think that so often we give up the adventure to stay in safety and security, and what winds up happening is addictions.
Mm.
The problem with addictions isn't so much fighting sin. Addictions is a matter of movement and going into the unknown and taking a risk with God. Because when you're on that adventure, honestly, you don't have time for the addictions. You just don't even have time. And I think when we look at addictions, I think we're fighting the wrong battle.
That's good.
That really is.
Well,
good.
Hey, that is just such a good place to end, because that's a thought to take in, to ponder until the next call. So, Jeff, thank you for this. This is so good to hear. And I love the fact that you are a man who thinks about his story, his desires, and his journey. And therefore, you know, you're one who deciphers and interprets the movement, the interaction, the involvement, and the voice of God. So thank you. This has been really rich. Really
good. Well, Gary, you were the guy that, you know, how's the story go when you're ready for the adventure, God will bring the guide into your life, you know? And you were the guide. You were the guy that helped me to get over the next phase of my journey, you know, with this message and what God has done in you. And it just absolutely pays a dividend in my life, you know. So thank you for being one of those guys who had gone over the mountains, you know, and were willing to come back and tell us what you found over there, you know.
Well, thank you. You're welcome. Hey, it's what I love to do. It's when I get to get in the cockpit and fly for a little bit, I love it.
Yeah. And that's not to say that your journey's not over, you know. There's further things, even at your age, that God is going to call you in that are new and very scary. And when they come at you, give me a call, okay? And we will talk.
I will. Hey, as one who is an agent of movement for men, you betcha. And I can tell you, I feel, you know, every week this live, die, repeat scenario. So,
yeah.
You know, like Tom Cruise, when she points a gun at his head and said, you need to die so we reset. And he's going, no, seriously. Seriously, let's not do this again.
Oh, that was a classic, wasn't it? No, no.
Oh, it is
I'm
so
okay.
Good. Yeah, my leg's broken, but I'm okay.
Okay.
That was
no, good. You're gonna die again here, you know? And,
yeah.
Oh, that was so good. So,
Jeff, thank you so much.
Okay,
and everybody, if you're interested from what Jeff said, we have on the calendar in 2015, one It's Your Time retreat for men at this point, which is at which will be in Seattle, Washington area. And then we'll have a couple more. So if you're interested after hearing Jeff talk about this, you let me know. You just keep watching the calendar. So everyone, good night. Go ahead.
Hey, Gary, where is it? Say that one more time. Seattle, you said?
This one will be in the Seattle area, Seattle, Washington.
Wow. And what month is that again?
And that's in March.
Okay. Wow.
And
all
then
right.
I'll probably do one out here, and we'll have a couple around this year in 2015. So, yep.
Yeah. Well, cool. Looking forward to
it.
Yep.
Very good. All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks,
okay.
Jeff. Thanks, John.
Okay. You bet. Thanks, guys.
See ya.